Let's open our Bibles this morning to the Old Testament book of Ruth. There are situations in life that can leave us feeling rather hopeless, maybe even wondering where God is. It's easy to judge God at times like that, to doubt his goodness, maybe, and question his power. C.S. Lewis wrote a little book called The Problem with Pain. And the real temptation, he summarizes this way. He wrote, "If God were good, he would wish to make his creatures perfectly happy. And if God were almighty, he would be able to do what he wished. But the creatures are not happy. Therefore, God lacks either goodness or power or both. This is the problem of pain in its simplest form." It's tempting to think that way. It's tempting to allow those kinds of thoughts to travel through our mind. We've experienced some of that struggle this week. Our newest grandchild, Ezra, only 10 weeks old, has a large cancerous mass in the center of his brain. Apart from a miracle, humanly speaking, there are no positive outcomes. As believers, we are not immune to cancers, to dementia, heart attacks, financial loss, or any of the other maladies that oppress humans in this life. Our family is not the first to have experienced devastating news. The hospitals are filled with people who have stories and moments that have altered their lives. This is the reality of the human condition in its current state. However, I am often reminded, both pastorally, experientially, and from this book of Ruth, that there are sometimes very happy endings to stories that started out very sad. In some respects, there's a disadvantage to knowing how the story of Ruth ends. We probably don't feel the pain and the grief and the loss and the hopelessness that Ruth and Naomi felt. This book started out with a famine. Most of us don't know anything about famine on a personal level when it comes to food. Then, as the story continues, in Elimelech's mind, he had to make a hard choice. And we might judge him for it. We might even say that God judged him for it. We don't actually know. The text doesn't say. But he had to mortgage the family farm to take care of his family. And then he moved to another country, to Moab, to what he thought was a better situation. He thought he was probably doing the right thing. And he went to Moab and he found wives for his sickly sons. But then things didn't get better. They got worse. Elimelech died, one funeral. Then Mahlon died, second funeral. Then Chilion died, third funeral. 10 years of famine, sickness that ended in three funerals, no money, and no prospects of a future. That streak of events could leave a person feeling rather hopeless. But I often think of what Barb Mead used to say. She used to say quite often, the story is not over. And for Naomi and Ruth, the best part of their story was just getting started when things seemed to be at their worst. They'd walked all the way back to Bethlehem from Moab, and God sustained them. People were happy to see them. And since it was the beginning of the barley harvest, Ruth claimed the provisions of the law, and she gleaned leftover grain that the harvesters had left behind. In God's providence, she happened to end up in the field of a kinsman redeemer, a Goel, G-O-E-L in the Hebrew, four-letter word. It means a kinsman redeemer. Because God cares about land and families and individuals and the needy, he gave Israel laws to protect and preserve people and the memory of their lives. Last week, we learned how Ruth and Naomi let Boaz know that they were requesting him to fulfill his duty and his obligation to redeem Ruth's dead husband's land and preserve Mahlon's name through marriage to Ruth. Now, if you weren't here last week, I'll just tell you quickly. It was barley harvest. Boaz had finished his meal. He laid down on a stack of straw, pulled his blankie up over his feet, and suddenly, in the middle of the night, he woke up and there was a woman lying at his feet. And she just very quickly, without apology, without a lot of explanation, requested him to bring his mantle over her, if you will, or a symbol that she was requesting him to fulfill his duty and obligation to redeem her dead husband's land and preserve Mahlon's name through her. So in this middle of the night meeting, Boaz told Ruth that he was willing to redeem her. But the first right of refusal belonged to a closer relative. He promised to take initiative, to care for the details. Now, we didn't talk about this last week, but it is rather notable, and we should mention it, that he didn't say to Ruth, "Now go to the other guy who's the closer redeemer and do the mantle thing with him." He didn't say that. He took the initiative. He, and this is one of many illustrations in this story today. And if your ears are filled with yourself this morning, you're not going to hear some beautiful lessons. This story has so many beautiful lessons. If your ears are open this morning and you're really saying to the Spirit, "Lord, I want to hear from you today," you're just going to be amazed that this story has all these realities in it. But this is one of them. They're sprinkled throughout this story. Boaz took the burden of redemption upon himself. Ruth had nothing. She needed a redeemer that knew what to do and how to do it and had the compassion to make it happen. She was helpless to secure her own redemption, but she found a redeemer who would. Now let's see what happened, starting in Ruth chapter 4, verse 1. "Now Boaz went up to the gate and sat down there, and behold, the close relative of whom Boaz had spoken came by. So Boaz said, 'Come aside, friend, sit down here.' So he came aside and sat down. And he took 10 men of the elders of the city and said, 'Sit down here.' So they sat down." Just like you, a lot of sitting down here. "Then he said to the close relative, 'Naomi, who has come back from the country of Moab, sold the piece of land which belonged to our brother Elimelech. And I thought to inform you, saying, buy it back in the presence of the inhabitants and the elders of my people. If you will redeem it, redeem it. But if you will not redeem it, then tell me that I may know, for there is no one but you to redeem it, and I am next after you.' And he said, 'I will redeem it.' Then Boaz said, 'On the day you buy the field from the hand of Naomi, you must also buy it from Ruth the Moabitess, the wife of the dead, to perpetuate the name of the dead through his inheritance.' And the close relative said, 'Oh, okay, I cannot redeem it for myself, lest I ruin my own inheritance. You redeem my right of redemption for yourself, for I cannot redeem it.' Now, this was the custom in former times in Israel concerning redeeming and exchanging. To confirm anything, one man took off his sandal and gave it to the other, and this was a confirmation in Israel. Therefore, the close relative said to Boaz, 'Buy it for yourself.' So he took off his sandal. And Boaz said to the elders and all the people, 'You are witnesses this day that I have bought all that was Elimelech's and all that was Chilion's and Mahlon's from the hand of Naomi. Moreover, Ruth the Moabitess, the widow of Mahlon, I have acquired as my wife to perpetuate the name of the dead through his inheritance, that the name of the dead may not be cut off from among his brethren and from his position at the gate. You are witnesses this day.' And all the people who were at the gate and the elders said, 'We are witnesses. The Lord make the woman who is coming into your house like Rachel and Leah, the two who built the house of Israel. And may you prosper in Ephratah and be famous in Bethlehem. And may your house be like the house of Perez, whom Tamar bore to Judah, because of the offspring which the Lord will give you from this young woman.'" So there's a lot going on here. Starts out with a meeting at the gate, and the gate was the place for official business to be conducted. Boaz went there and sat down. Whatever else he had planned for that day could wait. You know, when important things come up, other things can go. And he made it to the gate. The matter of first importance was redemption. And he would see to it. Behold, the text says. Every time the King James uses that, it means, guess what? You're not going to believe this. The guy happened to come by. Now again, God doesn't move us around like puppets or chess pieces, but in his providential care, he uses our actions in harmony with his plans to accomplish his ends. Did you get that? He uses our actions in his providential care, in harmony with his plans, to accomplish his ends. In the NIV, it says, come over here, my friend, and sit down. In other words, you are just the guy I've been wanting to see. Now, friend is a rather kind translation of the Hebrew. The Hebrew actually means you so-and-so. You so-and-so. Most scholars believe he is unnamed here because of his refusal to honor the law. But note this, please. What the law could not provide, the Redeemer would accomplish. There it is again. These lessons are just everywhere. What the law could not provide, the Redeemer would accomplish. In verse 2, Boaz wanted all this accomplished legal and proper. So he recruited 10 witnesses and he had them all sit down. You know, there are stand-up meetings and there are sit-down meetings. And this was a sit-down meeting. This mattered. So they all sat down. Redemption is a public matter. Have you ever wondered, well, you probably haven't, but if you ever have, why we keep a cross so prominent in our sanctuary? It's because redemption is a public matter. You ever think about the fact that Jesus died in front of hundreds, if not thousands of people? He didn't have a side room death. His death was very public because redemption is a public matter. So Boaz went on to make the need known. He explained the situation. Naomi, who had recently returned from Moab, had apparently mortgaged Elimelech's property. And he thought he should inform the guy that the property was available and that he was first in line to redeem it. The word redeem means to loose it from the bondage of the mortgage, to loose it from the bondage of debt. But Boaz was quick to add, if you don't want it, I am next in line and I will redeem it if you don't. I think he was eager, but trying to hold it back. Now, this is a very real situation. You could see this part of it happening today because people who own land and have the means to buy more land often do that. Land is valuable, and generally it increases in value, it appreciates. And more dirt means more crops, more food, more revenue. The so-and-so didn't waste any time. I will redeem it, he said. This would have been a good business decision. It's one of those kind of things where if you snooze, you... Right. So he's like, yeah, I'm on that. I've been looking for more ground, and I'm so happy, I'll take it. But Boaz wasn't finished. One more thing. The land comes with a woman that you have to marry. Now this has gone from a Hallmark movie to an Amish romance novel. We've probably all heard of BOGO, you know, buy one, get one. That doesn't generally mean buy a field and we'll throw in a wife and her mother-in-law. But Boaz raised this point. Now the purpose that Boaz stated was that in order to raise up the name of the deceased over his inheritance. You notice that? That's what he said was the purpose. The reason that this should take place was to raise up the name of the deceased over his inheritance. In other words, if Ruth has children, and that would be the goal, her children would have a share in your estate. Now, that changed the whole mood here. This guy was quick to buy land, but when he heard that it involved a marriage, a mother-in-law, and the sharing of his inheritance, He changed his mind. I just simply call this in your notes, the need passed off. When the so-and-so heard all the terms, he quickly changed his mind. Twice he said, I cannot. The reason that he gave was that it might ruin his own inheritance. He was more concerned about his inheritance than he was about Ruth and he was about the law. He was concerned about his own inheritance. Now, whether he could not or he would not will be debated for a long time. Several reasons for his refusal have been put forth. Perhaps, number one, he really couldn't afford to buy the land. He was going to go out on a risk. But maybe he couldn't support the two women that would come into his home. That's a possibility. Second, perhaps he didn't want to have the offspring of Ruth, the Moabitess, having a share in his estate with the children that he already had. There may have been a little racial business going on here. Or, some have even suggested, he thought, look what happened to her first husband. She is a Moabite after all. But all three of those reasons, by the way, and please note this, this is so beautiful. All three of these reasons ignore Ruth's need. Ruth doesn't come up in the picture. It's all about him. Whatever one of these reasons were, it was all about him. It wasn't about her. Very interesting, especially as the story pivots. Now, we don't really know, but I think as readers, we're kind of glad. We're glad the so-and-so said no. Because if we're reading along, we know that there's some interest here. We know that there's interest of Ruth and Boaz, and we know that there's interest of Boaz and Ruth and that night in that meeting, you know, in the middle of the night at the straw pile, when he said, well, it's true that I could redeem you, but there's a closer one. We're like, no! No, don't do that. Just marry her now. You love her. She likes you. Don't give this thing any time. Get to the courthouse and get it done. But now this so-and-so says no, and I think as readers we're going, yes. And I think that's what Boab was doing. When that guy said no, he's like, We want them to be together. So now we see how this redemption gets accomplished. Now, remember this, that Ruth and Naomi had no idea what was taking place. They're back at Naomi's place watching HGTV. They don't have any idea what is happening. Boaz had told Ruth, do not fear. And Naomi told Ruth, sit still. Remember I told you those five words could get a person through a week? I said that last week. Monday night I realized who they were for. Do not fear. Sit still. This meeting in the gate was not on court TV. It was not on Facebook Live. Ruth and Naomi would have to wait for the news the old-fashioned way. Person to person. Meanwhile, back at the gate, a strange custom was about to be observed to allow Boaz the right to redeem the land and marry Ruth. Said in verse 7, it was the custom in former times concerning redeeming and exchanging to confirm something, to either exchange a sandal or simply give the other person your sandal. The sandal was the receipt. Do you have your receipt? It was the sign that a legal transaction had taken place. Now, within the last 7 months, I've sold a house, bought a house, traded in a vehicle, and obtained another vehicle. I kept my shoes on for all of those transactions. However, there were the strange customs of our times. small and large pieces of paper were exchanged with signatures and numbers written on them. No actual currency, no bills, and no coins were ever used. I wrote numbers on a piece of paper, and I signed my name on the paper, and other people did the same. A shoe exchange would have been a lot quicker. But it does raise questions, and you know I can't walk away from this without asking these questions. I mean, this is just too interesting. Did you go home wearing the other person's sandal? And what if it didn't fit? Like, I wear size 13 shoes. If I'm selling to something to a guy who wears size 7, that's going to be a pinching toe day. Did they put the sandal in the file cabinet, you know, as record? You know, do you have your receipt? Just a second. And if you didn't exchange sandals but just gave one up, what would your wife say when you came home in one shoe? No, you walk funny when you're only wearing one shoe. And your wife sees you coming. What did you buy today? You said we could get that bass boat. It was a deal. It was a bargain, you know. Now, you may remember that the sandal thing came up a few weeks ago, all right? If you were here, you remember the sandal story. According to the provision of the law, in Deuteronomy chapter 25, if the near kinsman, like this so-and-so, refused to honor the obligation of the law, the woman could take his sandal and spit in his face. Now, that guy in Deuteronomy chapter 25, he did have to walk around in one sandal. He'd be walking across town and people would be like, oh. Okay, so we're in one shoe. He's got spit running down his face. We know what happened to this guy. That'd be bad. So in this case, I think it's very likely that Boaz actually saved the guy the shame and they swapped sandals. And in the swapping of sandals, his shoe on your foot, it's believed then that the symbol was that wearing that other guy's sandal gave you permission to walk on the land that he could have redeemed. The shoe to the ground. And it was a symbol that shoe that had been on that guy's foot was now on your foot, and that land was now available to you. Verse 9, Boaz didn't waste any time. Now again, here's one of these pictures, friends. I hope you can see this. Boaz was not worried about his inheritance being shared. And with whom? He wanted to bring the foreigner into his inheritance. Can you see that? He wanted to bring the foreigner into his inheritance. He delighted to bring the foreigner, the vulnerable, the weak, and the poor into his life to share his inheritance and to share his blessings. Does that sound like anybody else you know? So Boaz proclaimed, and I'm paraphrasing now, "I have redeemed all the property that belonged to Elimelech and his sons. And moreover, I have acquired Ruth, the Moabitess, to be my wife, to perpetuate the family name of her dead husband, in order that her offspring may inherit the family property here in his hometown. And you are witnesses today." Now, all this is going on, and Ruth and Naomi still had no idea. And I think another thing that's illustrated here is this, that whatever our situation might be, we can be sure of this. Something is happening by God's grace that we are not aware of. You know, whatever your situation is right now, whatever my situation is right now, there is something that God is doing that I'm not aware of. God is always working. He's up to something. And here, Ruth and Naomi still had no idea what was happening here. But God was doing his work, even when they couldn't see what he is up to. God doesn't always show us what he's up to. He doesn't always explain himself. He doesn't always give us a minute-by-minute playbook. But he's up to something, always working. Now, as you may imagine, this little meeting drew a crowd. People who had been coming to town for their daily errands saw 10 men sitting and a couple of guys exchanging shoes. And they wanted to be the first to know what was happening. Now, if you're not aware of this, there's a thing on Facebook called Greenville Matters. You know? And if you want to find the truth out about anything, you just go there. And I'm not on that, but my wife, she cracks me up because she reads these things to me. And like, all you got to, like, if you want to know what's currently going into the old Tim Hortons restaurant, for example, you know, like what's going in, just ask on Greenville Matters. You'll find out. You'll find out what's happening. Probably a Bass Pro Shop or Cabela's or something like that, you know, just mini version of it. I mean, somebody probably thinks that's what it is, or maybe it's, you know, it's a conspiracy of some sort. The FBI are going to set up shop there and spy on your life. I don't know. But Greenville Matters always has the answer. Now, maybe there was a Bethlehem Matters, you know? And people wanted to know. So they say, hey, does anybody know what the meeting in the gate was about today? They could jump right in and say, well, yeah, I know. I was there. Duh. Boaz redeemed Elimelech's property and has taken the Moabitess as his wife. Isn't it fun to know something first? It's so delicious to have information and to just... People are people. Things haven't changed much at all. And the power of information and the chance to share news, man, that is powerful stuff. And so there's a crowd that has gathered around this little assembly here, all these guys sitting down watching two men exchange shoes. Now, before Ruth ever found out what happened, the well-wishing and the blessings just start rolling in. And the people start saying different things. May the Lord make the woman coming into your house as fruitful as Rachel and Leah. You remember Rachel and Leah, right? Jacob's, two of Jacob's wives of the four. The rootedness of Israel and the nation, fruitfulness. And may you prosper. Now that's a very interesting word. And it goes back to chapter 2, verse 1, and chapter 3, verse 11. Chapter 2, verse 1, remember it says that Boaz was a man of influence or a man of character. And then in chapter 3, verse 11, it says that Ruth was a virtuous woman. Now it's the same word again, translated differently in the English, but it's the same exact Hebrew word. And what they're saying is, may you be as worthy together as you were apart. May your reputation, your character increase. Or if you really want to get right down to what they were saying, may you become the right kind of people. You know, that would be a good blessing for all of us to share with each other, by the way. I bless you with this blessing today. May you all become the right kind of people. May you all become people of character. May you all become people worthy of respect. May you all become the right kind of people, good and Christ-like. I wonder, are you praying that for your kids? Are you praying that for your grandkids? That they'll become the right kind of people? This is the blessing that was coming to Boaz and Ruth. May you become famous in Bethlehem. Well, that sure happened. Here we are. 3,000 years later, we're still talking about Ruth and Boaz. I doubt anybody will be talking about LeBron 3,000 years from now. Or Mahomes. Now, the last part of this blessing is a little bit strange. Verse 12. May your descendants be like the house of Perez, who Tamar bore to Judah. Now, again, if you're not, you know, literate in what happened in the book of Genesis with this story, That's not striking you as anything weird. You're just like, oh, yeah, I hope that, you know, the fruitfulness of your house, the success of your house all happens. But that Judah-Tamar story in Genesis is really twisted. It's almost sick, honestly. If it happened today, it would be scandalous. And so you read that and you think, whoa. Let's just stop at famous in Bethlehem. Can we leave out Perez, please, and Tamar and Judah? Can we just leave that part out? But remember this, that what happened between Judah and Tamar was not their son's fault. And Perez perpetuated the line of Judah. And you know who came from the line of Judah. Also, if you look at Matthew chapter 1, you'll find three women in the genealogy of Christ. Ruth, whom, you know, we like Ruth. She's, everything about her is virtuous. Then Rahab, of course, is also in that genealogy. And you know what she was. And then before her, Tamar. And if you're still in the dark about what happened with Tamar, I'll give you a little afternoon reading. It's going to be raining anyway. Boy, Tamar, Rahab, Ruth, all in the lineage of our Lord Jesus Christ. Now, among other things, it reminds us that stories that start in sin and bitterness don't have to end that way. When people allow God to enter their situation. And it means that fruits and nuts are allowed in the family tree of Jesus. On both the top side and the bottom side. Hallelujah. Because there's a few here this morning. When we first met Boaz, he was blessing and being blessed. Remember that? He walked into his employees and he said, "The Lord be with you." And they said, "The Lord bless you." There's this life of blessing, not of withholding, not of clutching, not of striving, but there's this life. Boaz is the kind of person where there's this mutual sense of blessing. He's blessing and he's being blessed. And blessing has a way of spreading. Have you noticed? A bad mood has a way of spreading. Boy, one teenager in your house in a bad mood. Everybody's in a bad mood. And one person in that house that's in a good mood has a way of spreading good mood. And blessing has a way of spreading. We bless others out of our blessedness. And we don't end up lacking in blessings. We usually find more. You know, when you're living out of the infinite blessedness of our infinite God, you're never going to run out of blessings. You can be generous. You can share your blessings. And here, Boaz, prominent man who lived a life of blessing, is now being blessed. Now, to wrap up, there's a scene that we don't have here that I really wish we had. I want to know who ran to Naomi's house. I want to know who told Ruth. My imagination's going wild. Can you see it? Is your imagination working this morning, or haven't you had enough coffee yet? I mean, this is so great. Don't you wonder about this stuff as you read through the story? Like, who runs down and says, Ruth, you're not going to believe it. Boaz! He what? He redeemed you! Get your wedding dress! He put a ring, put a shoe on it, I guess you should say. I just thought of that, just right now. And you know, how did she take the news? I mean, man. She and Naomi just danced, probably hugged each other, high-fived, I don't know. Took off their sandals, I don't know. I don't know what happens with, but I just imagine the great joy. Well, this book started with three funerals. But it's going to end with a wedding. Some bad situations do end sadly. They do. But not all of them. God never promised his children a life of ease without trials. He did promise to be with us, even in the valley of the shadow of death. He did promise that all things produce some kind of goodness for those who are called according to his purposes. And I'm so glad that God gets the last word on all matters of life and death. While the story of Ruth is great as a standalone story, it is the foundation for and a picture of an even greater story. Out of this union between Ruth and Boaz came the family of David. And from David's family, the Lord Jesus Christ was born in Bethlehem. And I just remind you again, if you still haven't seen it, I'm going to make it as obvious as I possibly can. Jesus is the Boaz we're all looking for. He's the one. He took initiative to redeem us because we couldn't do anything on our own. He's not concerned about us messing up his inheritance. In fact, he wants to bring us into his inheritance and share it with us. Joint heirs with Christ. He wants to bring us, the vulnerable, the poor, the foreign, the objects of contempt, into his family. People who did not have a God, people who had not a people, he wants to bring us in and cause us to flourish in his house. But we have to be willing to come under his wings, to come under his mantle. Now, if we want to go it alone, take our chances for time and eternity without a redeemer, he'll let us. But I'm telling you, friends, it would be a lot better in trials and out of trials to face life, this one and the next, with the one who loves us and gave himself for us. Now, would you stand with me, please, and just bow your heads for a moment. I'm going to have Pastor Rob come and close us in prayer. But with your eyes closed and heads bowed, can I just remind you that every provision has been made for your redemption. And if we've already said yes to the Redeemer, there should just be so much gratitude in your heart right now. Whatever else is going on in your life, redeemed. Redeemed. I hope your heart is just filled with gratitude. And it can share space with pain and struggle and doubt and fear and all the rest of it. But redeemed. Redeemed. And if you haven't said yes to the Redeemer, this would be a great day to do that, a great day to say yes to the one who loves you, the one who gave himself for you, the one who is not concerned about you messing up his inheritance, but he wants so badly to share his inheritance with you. Why not say yes to him today? Why not receive Christ today, your Redeemer? He's available to you. You don't need to add anything to it. In fact, you can't. You don't have anything you can bring to the table. You're as poor as Ruth was. You don't even have a shock of grain in your hand. You come with nothing. But he wants to give you himself and all that goes with it. And I encourage you, please, say yes to his offer today. You won't regret it. You won't regret it for time, and you won't regret it for eternity. He's the best thing you have going for you. He's with you. He's for you. And I'm reminded of what Paul said, and this is loosely translated and paraphrased a bit, but if he was willing to give you his son, if God is willing to give you his son, the Redeemer, he certainly will not withhold all good things to those who are his kids.